until 11. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye, live from Torquay on 94.7 The Pulse.
And good morning to everyone out there. It's fantastic to be down here once again at Cafe Moby in Torquay, talking about all the red-hot Surf Coast issues. And also welcome to the first day of autumn, and aren't we seeing it in very nicely. 33 degrees, the forecast top. We might be going over the road and having a swim after this broadcast is complete. And also a big thanks to Fred and Cheryl this morning. A really good country breakfast as always. They'll be back on Thursday morning. Coming up today, a really big program. Lots of Surf Coast issues to get stuck into. But joining us first up here in our broadcast position at Cafe Moby is David Bell, who is a Surf Coast councillor representing Torquay Ward. Good morning to you, councillor.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us. I imagine it's not all the time that live radio comes to Torquay.
No, far from it.
But how do you think everything is going in the broader perspective with the, of course, Torquay Ward and the broader council? What are your observations there?
It's interesting watching the process of change happen. It probably started about 1996 when councils were amalgamated and decisions were made, and they just keep rolling through. You know, Torquay was nominated as a growth zone by Coastal Authority and various other state authorities, and we now live with that decision and work our way around it as best we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, well, what we've done today is we've gone out there and asked some people about what the big issues are locally for them. Of course, one of the hotly contested issues is that intersection, of course, between Beach Road and the Surf Coast Highway. And obviously, it's got a bit of a reputation down here. Tell us about where we're all going with that.
That's been on our agenda for probably 6 years, the intersection of Beach Road and the Surf Coast Highway. Council in its budget has money set aside for intersection works there, which include a set of traffic lights. Possibly not the preferred option of people to see a set of traffic lights there, a roundabout, but roundabouts are very expensive when you've got to start acquiring land in township areas. Mm. So we need Vic Roads and the state government to really come on board with that and provide the rest of the funding that's required to do that intersection. I know Andrew Katos, local member for South Bowen, is currently running another petition to try and stir some action from our state government, and we support that. We support the fact that that intersection needs work.
And obviously a fair bit of lobbying is required at any stage to get funds. So how are you going about doing that?
We lobby. We have our mayor has very regular meetings with Andrew Katos and also with the Labor members who are down this way. And any time that you manage to run into a minister of the government, one of the topics of conversation is always that intersection.
Yeah, of course, and that's a really big local issue down here. It's interesting because you're sort of in two electorates here, aren't you? Polwarth and then also South Bowen. South Bowen, obviously, a very marginal electorate, and Polwarth being a bit more safe liberal. So what's it like working there? What's the working relationship with the state parliament?
The working relationship with state parliament is good. It's as a pundit once said to me, talk to both sides, but remember who's in power. So there is that potential for whoever's in power to change on a sort of 3 or 4 year basis. We try and maintain very good relationships with both sides of politics. We are local government. We are not state government. We are not federal government. We have to maintain good relationships with everyone who's involved at the moment and perhaps even peripherally involved at the moment.
That's exactly right. Now, talking about stoushes, we've seen one even on this program when we were here 2 weeks ago about the Aquatic Centre, because Sarah Henderson came and said her piece, and she said that there hasn't been enough lobbying for funding, and she said that rates are going to go up to fund the centre, and then Libby Coker came in with a slightly different perspective as the Labor candidate for Corangamite. So what's your perspective on the Aquatic Centre?
The Aquatic Centre, it's a project dear to my heart. I would love to see an aquatic centre. I'm a swimmer. I try and swim 3 kilometres a week. And there are a range of pools around, but there's a time factor involved. If you're going to do any sort of serious squad swimming, you need an aquatic centre. They are massively expensive pieces of infrastructure. The school my son goes to is currently building a small facility. It's 4 lanes, 25 metres, with a small teaching pool for primary school kids. There's over $6 million in that, and it's a very small centre. We're now living in a world where rates are capped. We can only increase our rates by 2.5% unless we apply to the Essential Services Commission.
There's a question coming about that, don't worry.
It's a question on everyone's lips, Mitchell.
That's it.
So the Aquatic Centre, I'm afraid it's on the back burner at the moment. It would be lovely if we could raise the funding. Sarah Henderson is perhaps sometimes a little... We have been lobbying for funds, and we know very well the funding regimes, and it sets out. When you work in government, you suddenly find that there are all these rules, regulations, procedures that you've got to follow. And while we could certainly fulfil most of the requirements, there is still a requirement of council to have probably nearly two-thirds of the money for an aquatic centre. We could go out and borrow it. That would put us at the end of our borrowing ability. It would make us, the Victorian Auditor General's office would start to look at us and say, you're getting up towards a margin where, you know, we don't want the council to go broke. So it's one I'd love to find a generous benefactor who had very deep pockets and long arms to reach to the bottom of them. But the Aquatic Centre is one where we will just keep on having to work on that one.
And the other thing I notice over in the adjacent city of Greater Geelong is that pretty much all of their aquatic centres, I think perhaps bar one, runs at a loss. So it's not just building the thing, it's also the ongoing maintenance, isn't it?
The ongoing maintenance. I mean, part of the aquatic centre, people said, why not just cut it in half and have the wet area? The wet areas lose money. The dry areas, the gymnasiums and those ancillary things, actually make the money and cover your running costs. So responsibly, you've got to build both. You've got to have both on the deck, both going. Otherwise, you have a continual drain on your funds.
Sarah Henderson cited when she was here an example of a Bendigo Aquatic Centre, which I think might have been successful in getting funds. Is that a fair example, do you think, or do you think that there's a slight difference between Bendigo and Torquay?
I think you've got to look also. Some of that funding, I think, for Bendigo was actually a renovation of an existing pool. Without knowing the full details of it, it's very hard to make sure you're comparing apples with apples, not apples with boiled egg.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned their rate capping by the state government, and I think it does seem to be a popular policy out there in the community because people don't like just putting more money on rates, and sometimes they don't see the work that is done by council. What do you think about the Dan Andrews approach of putting that rate cap on to CPI?
The rate cap, I mean, it's an interesting question. No one likes to pay more taxes, and effectively you could say a rate is a tax.
Yeah.
We think there is merit perhaps in the solution, but properly funded local government is essential if you're going to keep providing all the services that we provide. When state government says we're now going to shift the responsibility for this area of government to the local government area and doesn't provide the funding, it puts us under extreme pressure. Rate capping is a populist move. I mean, people love it. Right, you know, he's on our side. Beauty. We'll vote for that man. But I don't think the full ramifications. We would... Rate capping, if you put it at, say, the building index, because a lot of our work in maintaining infrastructure and in maintaining buildings and other council facilities would actually be more related to a building index, and that would probably, say, run at about 4.5% rather than 2.5%. There is built within it the ability to apply for an exemption from the rate cap, provided you've done the community consultation and you can show a definite need for that piece of infrastructure or specific thing that you're doing. So rate capping, we'll learn to live with it. You know, people may see services cut, people may see things change, but we will live with it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you don't have much of a choice. It's imposed, isn't it, by the state government. I mean, in terms of services being cut, are there any particular services that you see now that you think we could probably save some money by not running this service, or maybe not running it as frequently or to the extent that it is being run at now?
While I might have my own ideas, at the moment there is a review running through our organisation of everything that we do. It's something that happens on a regular basis, but with the sort of lens of rate capping cast upon it, we're actually looking at things that we are required to do by legislation, by statute, things that we've done because we just do them, and things that we might like to do or might not like to do that we've inherited. As we work through that process, and we have a dedicated officer looking after that, and I'm very impressed with the work he's done so far, we will make decisions on a case-by-case basis. There is no... For me, there are a lot of things that we do that perhaps we could do better. I think there's every organisation in the country has that sort of issue involved. We're taking a systematic approach. We've set up processes. We will look at it, and... some of our councillors have a very keen eye for the balance sheet and bottom line.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I just imagine out there in the community it is tough if wages are only going up at CPI, you know, 2.5%, but then rates are going up at 5% or above. There is a discrepancy there. So it's tough being on either side of the equation.
And you'd have to look at the fact that I'm a ratepayer too. And
yes.
I have an income that, you know, is basically fixed. So I fully understand that position. It's interesting being on the, say, shall we say, the inside of government. You get quite a different perspective than being on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
And I've been surprised how different that perspective has to be.
Yeah, of course. And I imagine that's like anything in life. When you're on the sidelines, it's easier to be critical than to actually be in there doing something. The Bells Beach Coastal Management Plan, this was another issue that people raised with us as being quite red hot at the moment. What are your thoughts and perspectives on that?
Bells Beach has had an interesting and checkered history. In 2010, there was a coastal management plan put up that raised the ire of large sections of the community because it proposed development within the sort of bounds of the reserve. We've spent a lot of time, and I've been involved in a lot of this, the Bells Beach Task Force and things, and we believe this time the coastal management plan that we've put up, it serves to respect and protect that environment. It is to, as I said on more than one occasion, I like to believe that my son and his children will be able to go there and they will see pretty much what I see now, except the trees will be slightly bigger. It's to respect the Indigenous heritage, it's to respect the surfing culture, it's to respect the environment of that area. We don't need to turn it into restaurant, tea rooms, you know, huge viewing platforms to look at the surf. The thing that comes out of it, and I've been up there a lot talking to tourists and things coming through, and they, particularly Californians, say, how on earth have you managed to keep this place like this? This is fabulous. Don't let happen to it what has happened to us in California. So I believe we are very much on the right track with the coastal management plan, that it's basically leave it alone. Let's maintain it, let's make it safe for people to be there, but we do not need to build monuments to our own egos for people to enjoy. Nature is the thing there.
So what you're saying is the argument that you might build those sorts of things or viewing platforms or commercial operations to attract more tourists, that's really a false argument, and the fact that tourists come here at the moment is because it is almost pristine and untouched and it hasn't been developed as much as some of the other big tourism hotspots like Gold Coast, for example.
That is the feedback we get from the majority of the people who take the time to turn off the Great Ocean Road and go down to Bells Beach. Mm. The reason they've done it is because they can see a natural environment. They can watch people testing themselves against the ocean in the surf. They can see trees and think back, you know, maybe we are the first people here.
Now, the flows of the Anglesey River following, of course, the closure of the Alcoa mine, what are your thoughts on that one?
That will be interesting. You had a river, I think its original name was actually Swampy Creek. And while there might be some who say we should let it revert and let nature take its course, there are issues because that environment's been so modified. I think there were nearly 4 million litres of water a day coming out of the mine and the power generation going down that creek. The studies that have been done to date indicate that probably something in the order of 1 million litres a day of water is needed to keep the levels up to stop acid sulphate soil problems, which will cause a fish kill in the river. It's a situation we're monitoring. Alcoa very kindly have kept the pumps running so that there is still a big water flow through the mine, but that's an expensive business. Running those pumps, you know, was not thousands of dollars, it was tens of thousands of dollars.
And would use a lot of energy as well, I imagine.
Yeah, we almost need to start the power station
That's right.
again to run them. Mm. But so it's one we're monitoring. We're heavily involved in it. It's not our responsibility. We can have a sort of a bystander's input because we do not own the land. But the community conversations that are going on, council is very heavily involved in that. We would like to see there needs to be sufficient water running through that creek to stop levels dropping so we don't get the acid sulphate problems. It will be, you know, it's a case where we've mucked around with the environment so much, how do we try and work it back to a stable situation?
And one final issue, of course, the push by the Surf Coast Shire to put in a children's centre in Torquay North.
Well, a much needed piece of infrastructure. The kindergarten spaces, we are short of kindergarten spaces. We have people taking their kids up to Geelong for kindergarten. We have the funding in place for that. The government has given us various grants, both state and federal. We have money that we have set aside. There is a developer contribution coming from the developers. We hope to be turning the sods and actually opening that kindergarten for business in 2018.
Yep, fantastic.
So it will be a great addition. And it's not just a kindergarten, it's a full childcare centre, a full sort of maternal and child health will be based there, so you get the full package in one spot, which has been shown to be the best way to do things.
Well, Councillor, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate it, and thanks for being, I suppose, the first Councillor to join us on our special Talkie Outside broadcast. Must be hard breaking the ice, but you've done a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you very much, Mitchell, and I hope I've set the bar high for my fellow councillors.
Absolutely, and we'll let you have your coffee now.
Thank you, Mitchell.
Councillor David Bell there, really appreciate his presence on the program this morning, Surf Coast Councillor. Coming up after the break, we will be looking at the issue of the Surf Coast Energy Group and renewable energy. Also coming up a little bit later on this hour, we'll be speaking to Elaine Carbines, the CEO of the G21. This is 94.7 The Pulse, live from Torquay.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.